Catholic Radio in South Carolina. This is Michael Brennan with Catholic Radio in South Carolina. On the line is Cormac O'Duffy. He has a very funny accent, but I think he also has something fun to tell the listeners in the Diocese of Charleston.
All right. Well, I'm delighted to be on your radio program, Michael. My background to what I'm talking about is that I came from Ireland 10 years ago, having spent a lot of time actually going around the country because I used to tour guide while I was a student. Got to know Ireland really well and loved a lot of the heroes of Ireland. But when I came to South Carolina, I read up on the history here because I love history, and I started hearing about this Bishop John England. And it wasn't so much his being a bishop here that interested me, but his relationship with famous Irish people, particularly a man called Daniel O'Connell. Daniel O'Connell was the person who won the vote for the Irish Catholics, and his greatest supporter amongst the clergy was John England. When I read this, I said, goodness, I've never heard of this before. I've lived in Ireland for years and been a student at UCD and at the University of Limerick. So I rang a friend of mine who's an emeritus professor of history in Cork, and I said, tell me about John England. What do you know about John England? He never heard of John England. I said, nobody seems to know this man. But the more I researched him, I found he was quite a force in Irish life long before he came to the States and was similarly such a great force here in the foundation of the church in South Carolina.
You're going to be doing something to commemorate this, correct?
That's right. Well, what I did when I started finding out about Father John and his life in Ireland, his life in Bandon, his life in Cork, his seminary in Carlow, and I contacted some of these people because I knew some of them from my time in Ireland, I thought I really should go to see the bishop here and tell him I'd like to bring a group over to Ireland to learn this history because it's not a known history. And when I went to see him, he was very interested in the whole thing. And I think even by that stage, we suggested, because I was meeting with some people to talk about this, that we might have a memorial to his life in Cork. And when the bishop heard about it, he said he would like one at the cathedral too. The people who suggested the wording for the memorial that we're having made are the Sisters of Charity of Our Lady of Mercy. And they let me see John England's ordination prayer. That's going to be on the plaque that goes in both cathedrals, here and in Cork. And there's a nice little touch to it also that I'm a musician, I'm a composer by work, and I work as a church musician. I've composed a setting of this prayer of John England, his ordination prayer he wrote in his seminary before he went and got ordained in Cork Cathedral. And we have a priest from the diocese here, it's Father Wilson, I hope he doesn't mind me mentioning his name, who's going to sing it for us in Ireland. And also, I think, one of the Irish tenors, one of the famous Irish tenors, is willing to sing it in Cork when we put in the memorial.
And you had some help here in the United States from our own Monsignor Lofton. Monsignor, why don't you tell the listeners how you got involved with Cormac O'Duffy?
Well, Cormac met me after Mass 3-4 months ago, and he asked me, do I know anything about John England? I said, oh, yeah, I sure do. And, you know, we started talking, and then he told me about the project that he had. I was very enthusiastic about it. Actually, about 10 years ago when I was in Ireland, because I think, as you know, my mom was an Irish citizen. I'm also an American and an Irish citizen. So I was in Cork, and I went to the cathedral, and I had talked to one of the priests there in the cathedral, and they never heard of John England either. I was so shocked because I was wanting to see a plaque or something. They had no idea who he was. So when I heard about his project, I just immediately gleamed onto it because it's a terrible thing to lose your history. Like the Irish have lost the history of John England. Well, you know, there's a neat way that we can restore it. This man was an amazing figure in Ireland. His training in Ireland then allowed him, when he came to the United States, to take up the same issues that were in Ireland, specifically religious freedom, and deal with it here. In Ireland, he had his own newspaper. When he came to the United States, well, guess what? He did the U.S. Catholic Miscellany, our Miscellany Today, which was the first Catholic newspaper in the United States. And the things he argued for was religious freedom. And I think it's kind of ironic. I mean, here we are in the middle of our country in 2019, and we're still arguing about religious freedom in the United States. I mean, very fascinating how this individual, his life in Ireland, played out here when he came as our first bishop, dealing with the same issues that we have. By the way, he was the first bishop, I think, to ever speak in front of Congress, and he spoke for like 3 hours on the topic of religious freedom. Good Irishman, he has no problem talking, right? And then Adams the next day really berated him for what he said. So this stuff is very timely, even though it's very old.
You're listening to Monsignor Lofton and Dr. Cormac O'Duffy. We're talking about the first bishop of South Carolina, Bishop John England. And we should, just for the sake of anybody in South Carolina who just thinks Bishop England High School, let's go over some of the biographical information for Bishop England. Cormac?
Well, if you want to start with me, he was born in Cork. A family settled there. There was a time when you couldn't go to Catholic school, or just before his time, there was no Catholic schools. His grandfather was in jail because he tried to teach as a Catholic. That was illegal. But it had just become legal. Some of these things were starting to become legal when he was a young lad. But his parents sent him to the Protestant school in Cork. And I think that sending him there gave him quite an ecumenical attitude, which was very much what was in evidence here when he came to the States. But he started off, he was thinking of being a lawyer. He was training in Cork. And then he felt the call to the priesthood. And the British government had just at that time given permission for a seminary to be in Ireland, because prior to that, all seminarians had to go somewhere in Europe, to France, Belgium, or to Spain or Rome to get their training. But he was one of the first people to go to Carlow College. So when he came out of Carlow College, he was ordained in 1808 in the new cathedral in Cork. He was the first priest to be ordained there. The cathedral opened in August 1808. And in September 1808, he was ordained. So he had quite a big life as a very, very bright young priest. All sorts of things he got involved with. He was the president of the seminary there. He was chaplain to the Presentation Nuns, where his sister was the superior. And he did work in jail. He was for 9 years the chaplain of the prison in Cork. But it's not these things, but this is like his background. The thing that spurred him, that stirred him up, was when the issue came up, and this is what I found terribly interesting, of the potential emancipation for Catholics, giving the Catholics some vote in their own country. It's when the British government at the time were willing to grant a measure of emancipation on two conditions. One was that they would have a veto on who would become bishop, and secondly, they would salary the clergy. Now, if you think about it not for too long, you can see that means they would have effectively controlled the church. And something stirred inside of John that this was not going to happen. So the amazing thing he did for a priest in his time is, his father, Monsignor was saying here, he bought a newspaper. He bought the Cork Mercantile Chronicle, and he made it a means to communicate to the people of Cork what he saw, what needed to be done, and how they had to rise up in some sort of way peacefully, but to take the issues to the government, that they needed to be free and their church needed to be free, while they gained their emancipation as voters. So he ran this campaign for several years, all the way up to the time when he got the call to come to the States. And if I just finish this little episode, he was so outspoken. He was this radical young priest who was a fellow agitator with Daniel O'Connell, who I mentioned about. They say he was so strong-minded that the other bishops in Ireland, or the bishops in Ireland minus one, all felt they wouldn't want him to become a bishop there. They'd rather he went abroad. And so this very, very vocal and very strong-minded and very passionate priest became our bishop here. And Monsignor can tell me a lot more about his life here, but the work he did here was so foundational in making the diocese what it is today.
You're listening to Monsignor Lofton and Dr. Cormac O'Duffy. We're talking about the first bishop of South Carolina, Bishop John England. Monsignor, he was so eloquent, even for the Irish, that we kicked him out.
Well, and there's a lot of truth in that, because I think, in a sense, they were a little bit worried about him. He wanted to come to the United States because he wanted to be a missionary in the United States. But I think because, you know, he was a pretty strong-spoken individual, the Archbishop here in Baltimore, Carroll, he was concerned about, in the United States, the difficulty with trusteeism was played. Sometimes it's called the Charleston Schism. Doesn't mean Charleston per se, but it's kind of the name that's been attached to it. And the worry was that we would pick up some ideas that the Protestant had here, that there would be boards of trustees that would run all the parishes, which means then the church would, you know, have no control over things. So he eventually went to Rome and asked the Pope to create some additional diocese in Charleston, and that's one of the reasons why they did that. And I guess because of John England's work, especially finding the somewhat similar idea in England, where he fought against the British having veto power of Catholic bishops. So apparently he got on the radar, and so his name was selected. And so from Ireland in the 1820s, and I think in the summer of 1820, somewhere in that neighborhood, he wrote his, after he was ordained, he wrote his first letter, pastoral letter, to the newly established Diocese of Charleston.
You're listening to Monsignor Lofton and Dr. Cormac O'Duffy. We're talking about the first bishop of South Carolina, Bishop John England, and his career as bishop. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, he came here late in 1820, and the first thing he did, because remember, the Diocese of Charleston included Georgia, North, and South Carolina. He came with his sister, and of course, she's the one who established the Our Sisters of Charity of Our Lady of Mercy, and they still exist. And he came with, the history is a little fuzzy there. Supposedly he came with two priests, but there's only a record of one priest getting off the boat when he got off here. And of course, that priest was kind of like his secretary, if you will. So his first visit was out of the state, was going down to Savannah, Georgia. He did that in 1821, I think in January, February of 1821, if my memory serves me right. And then he continued visiting the entire diocese, particularly North Carolina, Wilmington, and all those places in North Carolina, Fayetteville. In Charleston at the time, we had one church, and that was Mary's on Hazel Street, which is still there. The history says there was about 200 Catholics in Charleston and surrounding area. One of the first priests here, formerly assigned, was a Father Ryan, another Irish guy. And he was here for several years on Hazel Street. He rented an old Methodist church, which the congregation eventually bought, somewhere around, I don't know, 1790s in that neighborhood. And then, of course, that eventually ended up being the Mary's that we still have. So he came here. There wasn't going to be a whole lot of support for him. You know, it was interesting to see where he got the money. Irish history tells that he had to borrow money from his family to pay for the voyage to come over to the United States. So he certainly didn't come from, he didn't come from any money background. And some stories say that he actually rode stagecoaches and worked on the stagecoach to get enough passage to visit his diocese. So he was pretty amazing, but he got right into the whole question of trusteeism in the United States. And of course, Mary's church was a trustee. And of course, that was one of the first big problems he had to encounter, because when he asked to take the church so that it would be kind of like his original cathedral, they said no. So he put them under interdict. In other words, he shut down the church. And of course, then he went a little bit further away from St. Mary's. He went to what's called Vauxhall Gardens, where our present cathedral is, and he bought that property there and began to build the first part of the cathedral. He built a seminary. He had libraries here. He was one with the Catholic Miscellany, started arguing, because the paper was national at that time, for religious freedom, dealing with the big problem we had in the United States, where the Constitution promised freedom of religion to Catholics, but it didn't come about very well. For example, if you looked at the Constitution of the state of North Carolina, you would see in there that you had to be Protestant, and if you were not Protestant, you were not allowed to hold any office whatsoever in the state. So that was kind of the background of the South. South Carolina was the same way. They changed their constitution in 1790, which then allowed for the first congregation in Charleston to be recognized. So he immediately got into that entire issue. So kind of an amazing individual. And if you looked at the articles that he wrote in Cork, and then some of the things he wrote here, the same argument for the importance and necessity of religious freedom. His Irish background certainly played very well when he came here to deal with the American equation.
Catholic Radio in South Carolina.